Yes, you lovely people, if you're not already, make sure you give us a follow over on Spotify.
And she chose the ice cream.
That could be the worst answer ever on any game show. Ice cream van. Got ice cream van on the pitch.
She chose the ice cream van.
Hello, everybody. This is the Fozcast today. I am joined, as usual, with my mate Tom. How are you, pal?
Very good, mate. How's it going?
Really, really good. It's been a cold day at training today, but we got through it.
Looking a bit wet.
Got a bit wet. It's we've had some lovely warm weather, and now it's gone a bit cold, but it's not the end of the world. But I'm looking forward to this podcast today. You?
Yeah, big time. It's like my era growing up. We're all the same age, aren't we? So
exactly. If you're watching on YouTube, you can probably see who it is on the thumbnail, which I don't think is very good. Young Jamie has
Young
done.
Jamie
a,
did that one.
Has done a brutal job on it. But in the studio today, we have got a Premier League legend.
Yep. 100 Club.
He's a member of the 100 Club. Yes, you are. Don't shake your head. You are. I don't care what you say. He's a member of the Premier League 100 Club, scoring over 100 goals in the Premier League. Over 200 goals in total. 13 appearances for England. 4 goals. Over £50 million in transfer fees. It is Darren Bent.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good. That's an intro.
That's a nice intro. I mean, probably agree with you with the thumbnail, though.
You agree?
Yeah. It's rubbish, HD or something. But
exactly. Yeah. They're low-resolution images.
320 or something.
Like. Jamie's better than this as well. Jamie does all the thumbnails. He does all the bits and bobs like that, and he's normally bang on. But they are dead. That's about 20 years old, that picture. That one ain't far off 20 years old.
I think you're going to have to take the thumbnails back in-house, aren't you, mate?
I will do, mate. I will do. I could have done a better job than that. Anyway, right. Benty, before we get into the football and the punditry, the media work, all that kind of stuff, right, I want to start off talking about something that me and you share, yeah. Right? And it is a love, a big, massive love.
Addiction? Addiction. Is that the right word?
It is an addiction.
It is an addiction, isn't it? Yeah, it is. And I'm talking about trainer collecting, sneaker collecting, like they might say in America, yeah? You were the guy, actually, that really got me into it, okay? Like, really, really got me into it. I remember when we were away with England and stuff, you used to show me bits and bobs. You always had, like, bad boy shoes on your feet and stuff like that. And I remember thinking, I just love that. I really want a bit of that. And that was what got me started. Yeah. And this was probably, what, 15-odd years ago?
Yeah, probably a bit more than that, I'd say, probably.
And you, I know for a fact, you probably have one of the best collections in the UK.
I'd say it was up there. I think yours would have been up there as well. I think it would have been quite similar.
It would have been, yeah. Back in the day, it would have been,
yeah. But, I mean, it's sunk now. I mean, I did take a bit about 2 or 3 years off it for a little bit because like my kids were getting born and I thought, you know what? And do you know what it was? I went up to my loft at the time where I had converted and I had different sections. So I had, like, Diadora, Adidas, Puma, Nike, like, whole sections. And I went into one of the boxes, and you'll know this better than anyone, the sole was starting to turn yellow.
Oh, nah.
Air bubbles were popping.
Nah.
So I kind of just said, like, why am I doing this? Like, I've got no time to go up there and air them out and what you've got to do. So I tended to then go, you know what? I made a few calls and I started to sell them.
Yeah. How many, though? How many are we talking we sold?
I'd say about 600 pairs I reckon I sold.
What?
Yeah.
How many did you have at this point?
Well, I started up my own Instagram page. It was called Mr. UK.
Yeah.
Mr. UK 10, it was called. And people would DM me. And what I was doing is most days, like, not even auctioning them, but I was putting them up.
Yeah.
And people were just firing the DMs. And to a point, it was getting insane. Do you know what I mean? It was going over chat forums. And so I got to a point, and then I went, you know what? Enough's enough. And I stopped. And then I was every so often, I sell that now. Back into it now. Scanning all the websites.
Mate, you have to do some research, don't you?
Of course you do.
You have to, honestly, to know what's coming out and when the drop dates are, the release dates, what's, like, rumoured to happen, all that kind of stuff. You've got to go on the websites like Sneaker News and all this kind of stuff, Hypebeast and stuff like that, and find out what's dropping when as well.
You've got to start plotting your route as well in terms of, like, right, if I don't go to him, if I don't get it from him, let me go to him as well just to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
You know what it's like as well. 9 times out of 10, sometimes, you end up with 2-3 pairs because you've gone, if I don't get it from him, I'll go to him. And then all three of them come through and you've got 3 of the same trainer.
Yeah, but I guarantee you used to do what I would do. So when that happened, though, you'd think, oh, I might sell a pair. If I get all 3, it's not in the world because I might sell a pair. You don't end up selling a pair, right?
No, you end up
stacking them all and just like, I'll leave them. I'll just forget about them, right? How many? So at the peak, right?
Yeah.
How many pairs are we talking here?
Probably about 2,500 pairs.
What?
At the peak. Yeah. And do you know what's funny though, which is scary, is that I used to have it in my loft, but now, because I've got that many, I've moved into a storage unit.
Yeah.
So I'm probably not far off of that, but I'm going up to that kind of high,
getting up there again,
1700s. Yeah.
So when you say about them, like, deteriorating and getting a bit of yellow, so, like, I was watching a YouTube video the other day, and that's when they, like, wrap them in, like,
cellophane kind of thing.
Yeah, cellophane. Is that what you guys do or yeah, you should can do? Yeah. Or
you can, but I tended to just go up there and air them out, and it sounds stupid, doesn't it? But just get them out of the boxes, spend a bit of time in there, give them
spend
a, bit of love.
A bit of time with them.
Yeah, give it a love. And then, like, I even got a seat in there now, Supreme seat in there. So when I go in, I can sit down, take a bit of time, just go on my phone while I give them a bit of air and that.
Is it fully organised, everything?
Fully organised, yeah.
Like little sections, like you said, and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I said, when I was obviously at my pomp, it was crazy. Like, honestly, crazy. The sections were like Adidas and Diadora, Reebok. Because a lot of people were like, Diadora, but they don't understand. There's some big Diadora
mate.
Shoes
yeah,
out there.
Yeah, lovely.
Massive ones.
They used to be quality as
quality,
well, didn't
the
they?
Hannon, Diadoras, things
Hannon,
like that.
Yeah, Hannon ones,
beautiful
yeah.
stuff.
Oh, so, mate, I love all this.
It's an addiction.
What is your favourite pair out of the whole lot?
So mine would be Air Max 1, because that was my shoe.
Yeah.
Air Max 1 was the shoe for me. Atmos Elephant Print.
Yeah, nice. Yeah,
now,
yeah.
It's not the hardest shoe to
just
get
clean,
hold of.
Just nice and clean, though.
Exactly. Yeah. Love it. I must have bought it about 5 times.
Really?
Yeah. Because I like to wear mine. Yeah, I'm not one of these that buys them and just puts them in the cupboard. I always put them on my feet. I always usually buy 2 pairs. One that I rock and one that I just
there we go.
Stock.
I love that.
Yeah, of course.
One to rock, one to stock. Yeah. Simples. That's what I used to do, to be fair. But we moved house like about, it would have been about 6 or 7 years ago, right? We moved house and I like I say, I had a decent collection, really decent. I had 2 or 3 pairs of most of what I wanted
you
to
wanted,
have.
Yeah.
But because we the house sale like went through so quickly, right? We had to just move into like a rented accommodation kind of thing, and it was a much smaller house. I mean, much smaller house. And I got to a point where I was thinking, I can't bring all these trainers because I'm going to have nowhere to put them. And I sold. Honestly, I must have sold over half my collection easily. Yeah. Over half my collection. I didn't have nowhere near 2,500 pairs. I must have sold a couple hundred, couple 250 or something
so
like that, right?
Have you got any pairs that you regret selling?
Oh my
God. Yeah, loads. There'll be loads.
Mate.
Oh, well,
what's your top one?
There's more than loads, right? I had a pair. So I had the Nike Dunks, SBs, Pigeons, New York Pigeons, the staple pigeon ones, basically, which are like... Wow, mate, if you look on StockX now, they're like 40 grand or something.
For a pair?
For a pair. Mm. This pair, 40 grand, they're selling on StockX right now. I sold them for 1,200 quid or something, 1,500 quid.
No.
6 years ago,
honestly.
5, 6 years
ago.
What
about you, Darren?
Oh, so I had 2 that haunt me to this day. So I had the undefeated Jordan 4s.
Oh.
Now, if you look on StockX, I think they're going for about 100,000
pounds. Easy,
pounds.
That easy. That, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny how, because I managed to find them. I told the other pair I had, but them pair, I went on pre-season to Philadelphia with Villa. And I become friendly with the guys in this shop over there. I can't remember what the shop's called now because I think it kind of shut down. And I bought loads of pairs while I was in pre-season and shipped them back in a big box, about 15 pairs. Anyway, we played a game against, I can't remember who it was, and I got a text message saying, oh, I looked on their Instagram page and it was like, who's got money burning a hole in their pocket? These are for sale. But they wouldn't reveal the image.
Yeah.
And then the next day they revealed it undefeated straight away. I'll take them. So I bought them for £8,000. At the time,
£8,000. That's a lot of money at the time to drop on a pair of trainers.
But I need to have them. I ended up selling them in the end for about 32. I think I sold them for.
So yeah, but still. But
and the
still.
Other pair I had was a Paris Dunk.
Oh mate,
yeah.
They just sold the other day.
Yeah,
they,
Paris Dunk. Yeah,
yeah. Some proxy bought some for like 100 and whatever it was, 100 and something.
And both of them were dead stock.
Oh mate,
yeah.
In UK 10.
UK 10,
mate. Prime
isn't
size
that the
as
best
well.
Size, isn't it?
It was one of the best sizes.
9 or 8, 9, 10 prime sizes. Like oh my god.
So I had them. I had another pair, but it didn't really bother me. Like I used to buy a lot of my stuff. You know the shop Prime in Holland?
Yeah.
So I used to just sometimes just fly over there for a day, get my stuff and come back. Yeah. I had the Albert Heijn.
Yeah. Oh, Air mate.
Air Max 1.
The Air Maxes. Oh, my gosh.
Send them as well. Sold them.
Oh, they're the orange ones, aren't
orange
they?
Ones,
the orange, oh, my God, mate.
But you might know my friend Elsie, though.
Yeah, Elsie.
He helped me source a lot of these shoes.
Did he, yeah?
Yeah, loads of them.
They were always his grail then, weren't they?
Yeah.
The behinds, I
managed to find a pair, yeah.
Oh, my days, mate. This is incredible. I could talk about this all day long.
Well, you know you're a sneakerhead when... You come in and Darren goes, you're a 9, aren't you, Ben? I remember.
He remembers. Yeah. I spoke to Benny for years. He still remembers shoe size. Did you get any of the Air Max ones patters? The new ones, the waves?
Ones, yeah, I did, yeah. Beautiful. Nowhere near the old.
No,
the ones
don't
that
get
you
me
had.
Wrong. They are much better than the normals, though, aren't they? The normal Air Max ones. Any new release of Air Max, they're normal.
They're
average,
not cherry woods, though, are they?
Nah, they ain't cherry woods.
So what got on your feet today, lads? Is this just general everyday stuff? What?
I've got a pair of the old school Yeezys, Wave Runners. They'll do. They're comfy as you like these.
I just got the Terrascapes, the recycled Air Max 90s.
To be fair though, mate, you needed something comfortable today, didn't you? You had to wear something comfy on your feet today. Tell everybody what you did the other day.
This morning?
This morning was it?
What, playing 5-0?
Yeah, mate, what have you done?
Before I came here.
Really?
So I did the breakfast show, always going to play 5-a-side, and it was the last like 5 minutes of the game, calf just go...
Ping. And it's in bits now.
In bits now.
Mate, if it's in bits now, it's going to be double sore tomorrow.
I know. What can I put on it? I can't remember. Maybe a little bit of a tubey grip.
Mate, forget it, mate. Don't worry about it. Just get it up. Get a bit of ice on it and chill out for a few days. That's going
to
be painful.
I was supposed to play a charity game Sunday, so they might have to get knocked on the head. That they ain't going to be happy, are they?
Judging by the way you walked in, mate.
You've got absolutely no chance. What are you, 38 now?
Yeah.
Mate, you've got no chance. You're going to be in bits for a while. Mate, right, okay, that's the sneaker talk done, all
right?
We
have just realised that we've got Darren to come over to Spotify just on the Strand.
Yeah.
And when we've realised we all live within about 6 miles of each other.
I know, it's crazy.
So we could have just done it at our studio in Leamington Spa, which would have been really easy for
everyone
involved. Anyway, right, let's talk about the football stuff, yeah? Let's talk about football. Actually, before we do talk about football, are you just a sneaker collector? You don't collect anything else?
No, just sneakers.
You haven't got... When I say this, what I'm talking about is football shirts. Have you got any like real nice, notable football shirts?
Do you know
from,
what? I was never big on collecting the shirts. Really? There were players that I played against that I was desperate to get, so the likes of Thierry Henry, got his. And maybe when we play against Spain and Brazil, like I got Sergio Ramos' shirt from Spain, and I think Lucio's from Brazil.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really one of them that was. Some guys I know that are just mad for it, aren't they?
Collecting
get as many
all
as
over.
They can. Yeah. And I guess now, you look at it, if we'd have done it back then, the amount of money that it goes for now,
mate.
You would have never known that. But I was never really big on the old shirt thing.
Yeah.
No.
They are now, like, they're big business now. It's a bit like trainers have exploded, haven't they, to be fair? Like, the match-worn shirts of players, like, worth an absolute
fortune.
Ton. They're worth a fortune. Like you said, players like that, Thierry Henry, if you can prove that they're match-worn and stuff like that, but you're a player, so they're going to be match-worn, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They are worth an absolute boatload, aren't they?
Yeah.
Can you just try and explain to people how it works when you want to try and get a player's shirt? How does it work?
Well, I've seen quite a few ways it be done. So I've seen people get tapped up in the warm-up.
No, you have not.
Yeah, in the warm-up.
That's not on in my book. I think that's too early. Yeah. You can't do it. Unless you know them, I don't think you can do
that. You
know
that if you're warming up in your half of the pitch and then say something, most stadiums, if the tunnel's not in the middle, they have to run across. So you go, after the game.
Nah.
You could do that. I've seen it in the tunnel before the game. When we're playing against each other. And probably the best one I've seen was when I was at Ipswich Town, we played Inter Milan in the, back then it was called the UEFA Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
And the real Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, his comeback against
Ipswich
in the Cup, right? Obviously, Titus Bramble's tapping him up. Titus, and he's, Ronaldo, like, shirt, and he's like, yeah, okay. Ronaldo, obviously, the game finishes, he walks down the tunnel. We've just been beat 4-1. Titus forgets about the fans, to cut the fans, just sprints down the tunnel, taps him. Arguably the greatest shirt to ever get, R9 Ronaldo, Inter Milan.
Inter Milan bad boy as well, old school shirt, the R9, back then was
hammered
incredible.
By George Burley in the dressing room for not clapping the fans, for not, you know what I mean, going over there and showing their support. But I get it, Ronaldo, honestly, we went that way, he just took off down the tunnel to get Ronaldo's shirt.
Was that when you were playing in the UEFA Cup in the Championship?
Yeah, we finished fifth the first season.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the second season we got relegated and that's
after.
When we played against Inter Milan.
Yeah, I remember. It was
I think I'm taking a absolute bollock in there. I am.
I'm with you. I'm with you, 100%.
Because that's pride of place now. Like,
of course it is.
Imagine how much shirts like that are worth nowadays.
Oh, that's got to be worth...
Pirelli on the front.
Maybe. Pirelli.
Oh, beautiful.
The I don't know why they wore it that day. The black and
I know what you mean.
Grey.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, come on. Let's actually get into some football talk then. All right, yeah. So I said a minute ago, over £50 million in transfer fees, Benty. When you look back on your career, do you think, yeah, not bad that?
Yeah, you do. I mean, there's always things you can look back and go, oh, I should have had more opportunities there. Well, that was a lot of money. But at the end of the day, I try and live with no regrets. Everyone has regrets, don't they, about certain things they could have done differently. But obviously, I achieved everything I wanted to achieve, which was play for my country, score a lot of goals in the Premier League. And I feel I managed to do that. Obviously, internationally, there was so many more things I wanted to achieve. Going to a major tournament would have been one. Scoring more goals for England. Getting more than 13 caps. I know it's still an honour.
Yeah.
But you almost feel like, with the amount of goals I scored, I could have had maybe more, 10, 15 more caps, you know what I mean? But unfortunately, it just wasn't written in the stars.
I think I've got down here, actually, that one season where you scored 25 in all competitions, there was only Thierry Henry who scored more than you that season. You still didn't really get too much of a look in with England, did you?
No, and fair, it happened twice, because the first time was, which I think you're alluding to, was the 22, and Theo Walcott went, do you remember that?
Yeah, Theo went instead,
that
one.
And then, and the next time...
And he was a kid as well, wasn't he?
He was a kid,
like 18,
I'd never played in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So that was one, and then the 25 that you're talking about was when I got beat by Drogba and Rooney, but again, didn't even get a sniff.
Why was that, do you think? What is that? Is that a big club thing where they only want the players who are playing for the big boys?
I don't know if it's so much that, but...
Where were you at the time? Was that Villa, was it?
No, that was Sunderland.
Sunderland, sorry, yeah. Sunderland, yeah.
I probably feel if it might have been to do with the managers, it might have been to do with the whole setup.
Yeah.
But I think if Gareth Southgate's in charge back then, yeah, things are a lot differently for a lot of other players.
Yeah, sure.
Not just myself, but he would have seen that, okay, he's doing well for his club, I'm going to integrate him into the squad. But it was almost like Stephen McCann, not so much, Capello, it was almost like these are going to be my starters.
Yeah.
And even if they're 50% fit,
they're still
going before you. So I'd have had to wait till one of their legs fell off to get a real opportunity.
Mate, that's just, you know what? It was like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It really was like that. I think a bit McLaren as well. Like, I think they were all kind of like that. As long as kind of the big boys pick themselves, it's as simple as that. It doesn't matter what kind of form they're in for club or for whatever. They would just pick themselves, as simple as that. So players on the fringe like you, you'd get a go. You might come on for that last sort of 20 minutes, half an hour or stuff like that, but you never got a solid run in the team, did you?
I can even remember a time where, do you remember we lost to Croatia?
Yeah.
Didn't qualify.
Robbo, that was the one with Robinson where it bobbled over his foot.
No, that was Scott Carson. The one, Scott Carson.
Oh, I remember this. Thing he was manager, weren't he?
I can remember being on the bench and warming up, and he put a couple of subs on. I think he put Bex on, a couple others. And we're losing, but I thought, he's not going to put me on it. I think we were drawing or we were losing, one of the two. And I remember thinking, there were some big hitters on the bench. I'm thinking, he's not going to put me on, is he? So I'm warming up, and then he just turns around as I look and goes, Owen Hargreaves, get warmed up, you're going on. So I go back to my seat, and I usually take my shin pads off when it's been the three substitutions. Yeah. But somebody just said to me, you know what, just leave them on. And then they scored right at the end, didn't they? He scored the whip.
Yeah, yeah. It was horrible, weren't
horrible.
It?
Horrible. Yeah. And he turns around and goes, no, Benton, you're coming on. So even in that scenario, because he was like back to the wall, if he hadn't, he probably wouldn't have put me on in that game either. When we're losing, we need a goal.
It's almost like he's got nothing to lose now. Nothing to lose now, stick you on and that's it.
It does seem different these days, though, doesn't it? It does seem different.
But it is different.
Yeah, we
it?
Were chatting about it, like, obviously, researching your career and looking up. Obviously, we're the same age, so I kind of followed your career anyway. But one thing I made to Ben was like, you were just an absolute sure thing for a goal, weren't you? You sign you, it's like players, you look at like people like Jermaine Defoe, you're going to get goals, just no matter what. So,
but me and Defoe were kind of in the same boat as well, because even for him, he's got a lot of goals, JP. Yeah, he never really got trusted properly with England, did he?
No, he didn't.
And also, even with a big club, you think at times where they took risks on foreign players that had never played the Premier League, but it sounded great. Like the stats in whatever league they played and looked good. You had someone like Defoe who used to score goals for absolute fun, didn't he? But never got the opportunity.
Yeah, it's true, Jay. You were very similar. You had a bit of everything. Like, not blowing smoke up your ass, Benny, but you did. You had a bit of everything. Pace to burn. You were one of those where you didn't really need much.
I knew what my weaknesses were and what strengths were. So play to your strengths. But it was almost like it weren't enough. And listen, we were blessed with some fantastic centre forwards, but you just look at the goals and you look at certainly the middle part of my career, you think, I could have got more opportunity. I remember travelling pretty much all season and maybe getting on the pitch once.
Really?
Remember when Wembley wasn't Wembley, we were playing at all at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I know.
I felt like I was just up there all the time to watch.
How frustrating is that? Because you were both in the similar kind of boat. Obviously, you more so because you're a goalkeeper. But what's that feel like when you're travelling every time and you don't get a crack at it?
It's difficult. It's difficult, but I mean, you look at the positives, like you're with England, you're one of the best players, it's elite, but at some stage, you just think, just get me on the pitch a little bit. Let me show what I can do. Give me 10, 15 minutes at the end of a game. But when you're just constantly travelling, I could tell before I got to the squad whether I was going to get an opportunity.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Because
why? Like what? What was it?
Because even, it doesn't matter what kind of form I was in, I could have had 5 and 5, 10 leading up to that international. All it took was Rooney to get 2 in that international before.
That'll do.
Or Owen to get a goal that weekend, or Crouchy. And that'll do. I knew they were going into it in great form. They were always going to go.
You know what, as well? You can always gauge a bit from like the England manager calls his squad and stuff like that, and he names it and stuff. If he's sort of blowing smoke up somebody's ass a little bit, that means they've got a chance of starting a bit. So, but even back then, like I say, when you're scoring goals and stuff, you'd have liked the England managers to have gone, well, Benty's on fire. Like, I'm going to have a real decision to make here.
Never came.
His mind was made up already.
Exactly. And the only time it changed for me was at the very end, where they went to 2010 World Cup. Wasn't great. I think it was quite poor. Is that the one where they got beat?
South Africa, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, where the Lampard goal
got
beat.
Yeah, up and down, yeah.
He didn't take me. And I remember coming back for the first international the following season, and Capello saying to me, I made a mistake, I should have taken you.
Yeah.
From now on, you're going to be my number 9.
Really?
And I went on a run of scoring in 4 consecutive games.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was part of the squad. But even that, I got injured, he got the sack, and it was never the same after that.
You mentioned Capello there. Talk to me about Fabio Capello, because I was in the England squad with Fabio Capello. And it'd be interesting to know what you think of him, because I've got my own personal opinion on it, and I'll happily tell you
who's
going to
go first. Who's going to go first?
I'll let Fozzie go first.
Go on then, Foz.
Do you know what, right? He was the first time, like, obviously I've played for, like, like coming from Sir Alex Ferguson at United and all that kind of stuff, where he was firm, he was strict, and you did it properly and blah, blah, blah. But he would give you little bits of leeway. Like, he would let you kind of, do you know what I mean? When you go for food and stuff, you can eat what you want. Like, training, like, when he blew the whistle and it was time to train, you trained and you did it properly. But, like, Capello, mate, he just was over the top with absolutely everything. I remember this one time, right? Madness. We're at Wembley, about to go out for the warm-up, and Bex and, I don't know, it was Rio maybe or something like that, we're in the change room doing like a bit of one touch or two touches to each other or something. In the corner, away from everybody else, just doing it. He walked in, because you have to walk through like the different sections. He walked in, waited till somebody had looped it, picked the ball up and just walked out, right? And you've got big old Bex, big man. You got big man Bex just standing there going, what? Like that. And everybody just sort of looked at him and went, oh God. But that's what it was. But then I think that was starting to lose its respect, like, straight away. Yeah. As soon as he did it, everybody was just like, that's just a dick move. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the food stuff. Like, he took all the good stuff
all
away
in
the food. All the condiments, ketchup, oil, cheese, like, all that kind of stuff. Everything was plain and boring. It was just like, oh, what's
so
the point?
So if you're having, like, pasta, so we're talking, like, the elite of the elite here. So, honestly, a bit of salt or a bit of oil
on
your dinner?
Is that gonna
I was going to say, is that going to really make an impact when you're away with England for a week?
This is what he was like. Come on, you give me yours.
Honestly, I'm pretty much ashamed, but I said I saw two versions, because the first version was the one that Fozzy just said there about no condiments. I remember, even if you wanted to go downstairs to get a snack, you couldn't wear shorts.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember,
no flip-flops either.
You had to wear full tracksuit, and you thought, just like, calm down. I get it with the whole no phones in the canteen,
yeah,
I get
yeah,
all
yeah.
that. But that was it. That was all kind of tough as well, like not being able to relax. But then after the 2010 World Cup, I remember he completely went the other way.
Yeah.
He started letting you come down in your shorts, be a bit more relaxed at dinner. There's a bit more options on the menu.
Yeah.
Because I think he realised that it wasn't really working.
Yeah.
It wasn't working.
Players
so
were too much on edge all the time.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. So I think he kind of changed it up a little bit. Because you can think about it, you've got your club form. You've got a certain weight at your club. He can't then, because he's only got you for 10 days, completely change up everything used to.
Yeah.
So I think he then realised that. Someone explained that to him. And then he softened a lot.
Did he? Yeah.
But then he lasted, what, 6 months before he got the sack?
So what was it like when you would go back to your rooms, because you hear things like you just couldn't do anything? Like,
well,
with Southgate,
like, you could still go and do a bit, but you'd be on edge worrying that, like, if you made a bit of noise, like sometimes a lot of times people take their PlayStations and stuff like that, and they'll plug them into the telly in the rooms and stuff like that, and you might have your mic on and you're talking and stuff. You'd always be on edge thinking, if he hears me, might just get a bang on the door and he's coming like bowling in sort of thing. Like, you would always be on edge. It was right. There was another thing he did, right, where when you had dinner, he would make everybody wait until the last person had finished dinner. And sometimes, like, what people like to just get in, nail their dinner and then just go off to the rooms and chill. Do you know what I mean? It was almost like he wanted people to stay and chat and like be a team and stuff like that, but it's too forced sometimes. You can't do that, right? And I'd got in late because I'd had talking to somebody, whatever. So anyway, I'm sat there on this big long table of all, this is when all the big boys were in there, Rooney, Ronaldo, Lampard, Gerrard,
Ronaldo,
all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Did I say Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Rooney, Rio. You definitely weren't there. And I was sitting there, like, so I was like last one to start eating, basically. So I'm thinking, shit, I need to get this down quick, because otherwise all the lads are going to be going, come on, like, come on. So anyway, I'm eating. And then, again, I've got, like, Beck sitting opposite me there. And I'm fretting away, thinking, I don't want everybody to be going, Fozzy, hurry up. So I'm, like, eating as quick as I can, like, and I can notice that the lads are looking, and I'm thinking, oh, this is horrible. Beck's opposite me is still eating as well. Mate, the most bothered ever, like, he's sitting there chilling, like, looking down at the lads going, yeah, sweet, and I'm like bright red, shitting myself, thinking, oh, don't. It was horrible, weren't it?
That's the worst thing. You're right, because that, you're right, you happen to be the last, and that puts you on edge straight away, because I think it's uncalled for. Just eat your food. If you want to go back to your room, go back to your room. But you're right, if you're a big hitter, then it's all right. If Bex is doing it, you go, all right, Bex is eating. But if I was doing it and they're waiting for me, I'm there going, oh no, can't even enjoy my food, just waffing it down like that, because
it's
just horrible. Unnecessary.
So when you guys were with England, was Bex captain? How was he as a captain?
He was good as a captain. I got on quite well with him. I thought he was did everything properly. We talk about superstar of the game. So I had no issues with him. And to be fair, one thing I'd say about him as well, I mean, Fozzy, you probably know him better than I do, but I never thought he kind of abused his power. If that makes sense. Even though he's captain,
he's a nice lad, isn't he?
He just felt like he was one of the guys, do you know what I mean? So he was a good captain.
Did you hear that story that he used to bring Lego to England all the time?
No.
Apparently he used to be like, he's mad into his Lego. So he would bring like a massive thing to do, like a Death Star or something like that, a big Star Wars something. And then he would disappear, because he would just disappear in his room kind of
He'd
thing.
Get on with your dad,
chill, and he would just sit in his room doing his Lego thing while he's away.
Serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Happy with that.
How did you find him, Ben?
Again, same as Bentley there. Just a nice guy. Like, he obviously is a massive name and stuff, but he's just a good guy, isn't he? Just a nice bloke. Just went about his business, and professional.
And in terms of football ability, where does he sit?
I don't think he's as good as people like Gerrard.
No,
Scholes.
No, I'm with you. Yeah. Different players, different positions and stuff, but still, yeah.
Technique, and talk about one attribute that he's got a world-class right foot, hasn't he? Yeah. Set balls, but talk about everything else. Gerrard was an animal, wasn't he?
Animal, mate.
Everything. Running forward, running back, tackle, shooting, intensity, everything.
He was everything.
Did it surprise you when you joined up with England and you for the first time and
when you look at these, I mean, I got into the England squad relatively early into my Premier League career. So, but I'm at Charlton, which is obviously a small club compared to Chelsea's, United's, Arsenal's. Yeah. And when I'm sitting at the table, I'm looking and I'm just seeing big hitters left and right. It's like, oh my goodness. So I'm preparing for training, like I'm preparing for a game, like stretching in my room, getting the fluids on board and that. And I'm thinking, like, the standard's probably going to go up a couple notches from when I'm at Charlton.
Yeah.
But just seeing these guys operate. And
good Charlton team, though.
It was a good Charlton team, mate. But it wasn't like what Steven Gerrard, Lampard, Rio. Yeah. Honestly, it was a real eye-opener, because I just knew that if I didn't bring it for training, if you look like a possession, if I gave the ball away and I've got these guys chasing it down because I keep giving it away, it was something that I had to really focus on. It was honestly scary, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Did you find that when you went away with England, then went back to Charlton, you were a little bit sharper, you were on it a bit more?
Yeah, my levels went up.
Did they, really?
Yeah, because all of a sudden now, I'm going back to Charlton, no disrespect, with some good players there, but it was one of them where if I give the ball away, I'll probably get it back relatively quick.
Yeah.
England, honestly, if these boys are chasing, got like some Rio and Rooney, keeping possession, and I keep giving it away, they're going to get onto me. But I went back to Charlton, my standards went up, but it was almost like, well, I know that if I do make a mistake,
not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world. Whereas with England, you felt like every
they were on
session,
you, weren't
on
they?
You.
They weren't like killing you. They weren't killing you like shout, nah, but they were like, hey, come on. And so it was constantly, you had to just be like
switched on
all the time. It was class, to be fair. Really, really good. Just quickly, talking about England then, who was your favourite England manager you played for?
It's going to have to be Capello.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to have to be, because Sven, not for me.
He was very quiet, wasn't he?
Very quiet. Got absolutely bossed by the big players,
didn't he? Yeah.
Had no kind of authority at all.
Did he?
Bully him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very quiet.
In terms of just do what they want?
Do what they want. If they said they were fit, they were fit. If they weren't, they weren't.
He didn't really say a lot of anything. Even before matches and stuff, like on match day, like just quiet as a mouse, honestly.
I think that was the opportunity when we could have won stuff.
Yeah.
Around that time, yeah. Yeah, for sure. McLaren, he was. I like.
Yeah,
him.
I had Steve at Derby as well. He was alright, to be fair. I felt a bit sorry for Steve, because when he got the job, he wasn't everyone's favourite. Was he? Remember him getting pelters before he even got the job? But he was alright. But probably Fabio for me. Capello.
Do you think he didn't have the right profile, Steve McLaren? Wasn't a big enough name?
Well, maybe? Because, I think because they had their eyes set on some of the bigger managers at the time that were out there. Yeah. When it then was like, well, Steve McLaren's available, it was almost like. And that's no disrespect to Steve, they were getting linked to, who was it, Scolari, I think maybe was one.
I remember that,
other managers. But when it fell back to Steve, it was almost like the nation were just like, all the guys that wrote the papers were just like,
And then they had it out for him. So, like, remember straight away, like, Wally and the Broly and all that kind of stuff. Like, they're just horrible back in the day, weren't they?
But they're lucky, though, because there was no platform to fight back.
Which is why
now they've had to bend a little bit.
Exactly.
Because all of a sudden, if they say, oh, Ben Foster made a mistake, he's this, you go, hold a second here, at so-and-so, this ain't the case, and you ever go back, and all of a sudden, all your following gets onto these people.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah,
of course it's good.
Yeah, this is why the England team, I think, now are doing like so much better, kind of thing, because they've got the media on their side a bit. Because they're a little bit more afraid now of writing like unfounded stuff. You better bring facts and figures and everything, mate.
Yeah,
you better be
good
to go. Do you know what I mean?
And a lot of these players have got big followings now on their social media, millions and millions of followers. So if someone writes an article, and all it takes, say Raheem Sterling, for instance, use him as an example. They say something about him. He adds the whoever wrote the article.
Yeah.
All the millions of Raheem Sterling followers are
going. He's getting dogs abuse. Yeah, I know.
So you have to be careful.
I got tagged in a Man United post yesterday. I did a podcast for them the other week, and I got tagged in it yesterday, right? Mate, my feed is clogged up to death, right? Of all just Man United fans, not even commenting on the podcast. They're just saying, we want Glazers out. We want commercial FC. Sign a player, sign a manager. Ten Hag, mate. It's literally just refreshing every second.
Someone did a piece on you earlier on in the season, and it was really interesting because it was a bit of a sloppy article. It was a very sloppy article.
Yeah.
And a lot of your followers kind of came on and just called the journalist out. Yeah. And were like, "This is really lazy journalism." They weren't abusing him because you'd never advocate that, but they were speaking. Yeah, they were saying, "This is lazy journalism."
It's fine if you've got
a source close to. Come on,
yeah.
You know, give us more than that.
But that's the thing. Now players and everybody's got a platform now to fight back, which is why you're probably right. The national team going away with an England team now is probably a little bit more relaxed because but if I do make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. Whereas back then, you make a mistake, they're on you, aren't they?
Yeah.
Back page of every paper, useless. This, that,
they'll be on the front page. Sometimes,
front page,
mate.
Yeah.
Honestly, now, horrible. This is why I love listening to you on TalkSport, mate. I do. Honestly, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, Bentley, but I do. I absolutely buzz off listening to you because you see it from the footballer side, but you're always also a sensible bloke. And so you'll tell it as, like, you'll never say somebody's rubbish or somebody's crap or blah, 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 because footballers aren't crap. They aren't. They're trying their best.
You can't be crap to be at that level.
Exactly. But you see what they're going through. You're seeing what they're trying to do, at least. They might be suffering a bit of low confidence, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So you say it as you say it, and I love you for that, mate. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
So when we're talking about football, obviously you started at Ipswich, moved on to Charlton, young man, £2.5 million. So Alan Kirbishley, was he your gaffer there?
Yeah, he was.
Okay, how was Alan Kirbishley?
Yeah, he was great, Alan Kirbishley. He probably one of the old school English managers. Yeah. Was another one who'd been linked to England before. He'd been linked a number of times. Linked to, I think, Aston Villa job, big jobs. But he was just perfect for me, told it how it is. And what I think gave me the confidence, that kind of first step up to the Premier League. Well, not first up, because I'd had a little taste with Ipswich.
Yeah.
Was that he basically just said to me, like, black and white, listen, I'm buying you to start. First game of the season. I'm not buying you to put you into a squad and then you find
your time. You can grow, develop and stuff. Nah.
Before he even signed me, I'm signing you to start day one. So listen, if you're not ready first game of the season, that's not my fault. That's your fault.
Yeah,
because I've told you now,
you're
going to be stuck. So I don't care if you don't score a goal pre-season, you're starting game one to get yourself ready. So that's what I need to hear.
You got off to a flyer as well, didn't you?
Yeah, did you? I mean, I think I've got five of my first five games or something crazy like that. So.
Player of the month, August.
But it helps. I think for any new, and this is why it baffles me now with transfers, why do you sign players for big money and not start them straight away?
Yeah, I know.
You say you want them to fail. Yeah, put them straight in.
So I had Van der Beek at United when they signed him.
You could go through the whole Man United squad and do that. Players like that, Sancho, and you know what I mean? Varane and stuff. Players like that come in, like, we'll give them a little bit to bed in and stuff like that. No chance,
mate. Put them straight in, let them go. As a centre forward, it's even more important. For me, it was always important. You have to hit the ground running.
So as a striker then, you need your manager to be basically going, right, you are going to win us a game again today. Is that what makes you like tick?
Knowing that you haven't got that. I mean, it's a bit more different now because it's rotation, but you need a manager that's always going to say to you, regardless. Because I remember going five games without a goal, six games. That will never happen now. Two games out, get out of the team.
Yeah.
But that he just goes, you're my centre forward. Doesn't really matter if you go five, six games. Yeah. You're still going to play. So you know eventually you're not going to go that long without a goal, but you've got that belief in your manager and that tells you that he believes in you as well. And when a manager believes in you, you know what it's like. If he believes in you, you'll do anything for him.
It's class, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when Alan Kirbishley left Charlton, obviously went to West Ham, I was so surprised that he never resurfaced it. I know he went technical director at Fulham, but remember for a period of about 5 years, every job that went, he was 2-1 favourite.
Yeah.
It seemed like
never
for about 5 years.
Why
do you think he never... I know there was a bit of a case with West Ham that he won, you know, whatever, but why do you think he never resurfaced in management?
I don't know. I've never played for him. I don't think I've even met him, to be fair.
Yeah, he was brilliant. And to be fair to him, when he went to West Ham, at the end of the season, we got relegated because Charlton Football Club has never been the same since he left.
Yeah.
And you're talking what he left in 2005.
Yeah.
It's never 2006. It's never been the same. He tried to sign me when I left Charlton because we went down to go to West Ham.
Did he? Really?
But I went to Spurs, yeah. I look back and think, oh, but at the time, I just couldn't have gone to West Ham over Spurs because Spurs had finished fifth.
Would Spurs have paid the money? Would West Ham have paid the
money? Yeah, they would give me more money, wages wise. Because that's when they had that mad period, West Ham.
What's his name? Yeah. The Icelandic guy.
Magnusson.
Yeah. Egger Magnusson.
Where they were throwing money.
Egg because he had a bald head and his name is Egger.
That was that period there where they were throwing
money. Mate, Lundberg on like 100 grand a week and stuff like that.
£100 grand a week, right back.
They were throwing money. Neil, do you remember that?
Honestly, throwing money about.
Was that the Tevez time?
Tevez was that time as well. But I think Tevez went to United. Did he go to United or City?
Where they went?
No, he went to United.
United first.
Yeah, he went to United first.
Right.
Bloody hell, yeah. Remember that, Egert Magnussen. People don't talk about this kind of stuff anymore.
No, but that period there, Kieran Dyer as well, they gave him crazy money, couldn't stay fit, Bellamy.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of mad period. But for Alan Kirbishley, I mean, you're right, because I had him as a technical director at Fulham. But he just never seemed to be able to get himself back in. He was always linked to the Villa job. He thought he had that job, and they gave it to Gerard Houllier. He thought he had another job, and they gave it to somebody else.
Mad. Because like from the outside looking in, it almost looked like he was waiting to pick the right job himself.
Yeah, no. Just couldn't get back in.
But then that's a way, like, once you go too long without a job, it's like people stop mentioning you, and then that's it. It's like
a bit like that with Eddie Howe for a period. You thought,
he
needs to get back in here. He needs to get back in here a bit.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, then 16.5 million to Spurs, yeah? Mm. What's that like? So basically, I've been at smaller clubs and then I've been at a bigger club, and then you see the difference in everything, in the facilities, in the way that they train, the professionalism, all that kind of stuff. Was it a massive step up like that?
Yeah, I mean, the training ground was a big step up, but to be fair, if I'm honest, when I look at the three training grounds before that, were the two, Ipswich, Charlton, and then going to Spurs, Ipswich was probably the best out of the lot.
Really?
Yeah, probably. I'd probably say so, yeah. But yeah, it was a big step up. The player that was there now, you talk about the likes of Berber, Robbie King, Defoe, Jermaine Genus, I mean, Ledley King.
Wow.
The team.
How good was Ledley King?
Oh, my God. I promise you, he would have been the best.
Really?
Yeah, he would have been the best by some distance. But he had no knees. Like, unfortunately for him. Like, he used to train. When I first got there, he would train on a Friday. We'd do an old V Young on a Friday train. Then towards the end, he'd just go out and do like a few volleys. And then towards the end, he would just go in the pool and swim on a Friday.
Wow.
And he was just playing matches?
Oh, play matches. Man the match every time he played.
What was it? It was just bone on bone with him. No cartilage.
No cartilage
left
at all.
Oh.
But I think he had it in both his knees.
Oh, mate.
But honestly, and I think because his right knee was so bad, he trained himself to play with his left foot, which is phenomenal. But he would have been, for me, the very, very best. But it was just a step up in quality.
Was it?
Training was better. Martin Yeo, as a manager, was a little bit maybe bent towards the senior players a little bit more.
How old are you at this point here?
23, maybe.
Yeah, he's still young, aren't
still
you?
Young, yeah. So, but going there, because it didn't go well at Spurs. Like, I openly admit that it didn't go well at Spurs. Even though I was top goal scorer the second season, didn't go well. But what it did do was make me grow up as a person and a player. Because the next time the big transfer fee came around again, didn't bother me at all.
So didn't you sign? I'm sure I saw a picture. Weren't you the same day that Bale signed or same
window? Me, Bale, and Yunus Kabul,
right,
all signed, and even he got off to a horrendous start. Gareth Bale,
mate, they didn't win a game for like 15 games.
It might have been a year and a half.
It was ridiculous.
Wasn't it something like 40-odd games or something obscene?
Mate, I remember when I was at Birmingham, somebody in like the hierarchy there said that they had a bid for him for £1.5 million, and Tottenham were genuinely considering doing it because he got off to such a bad start. His confidence was so low, like every time he went on the pitch, they would lose guarantee. He was having bad games. Birmingham made a bid for him, £1.5 million, he said, and it was like really close.
He was the left back at this point, wasn't he?
He was. And you know what's funny? I was sat in a meeting where he was struggling, and Harry Redknapp was like, that basically awful, like, terrible. You're not strong enough, you're weak. Really? And then we're going to send him to Forest.
He was saying that in front of the lads.
We was going for a bit of a bad spell.
Yeah.
We was all in a team meeting, and Harry just went through all the players. Like, to be fair to him, he was like, Jonathan Woodgate, Ledley King, got no problems with you. Brilliant. Jermaine Genus had a pop at JJ, had a pop at me. David Bentley got it.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale got it. But I remember they were going to send him again to Forest that long.
Wow.
And obviously, fast forward, I remember coming back. I'd left by this point, and we played them early on in the season. And I remember looking at him thinking, what's he been doing? Absolute comeback, a monster. The massive legs, huge.
I know.
Massive. But no, it was, as I said, it was a real eye-opener at Spurs. It was just tough trying to break into that front four.
That's a big front four to be like, big front three to be joining.
Yeah.
So you must be signing there thinking, wow, mate, I've got Dimitar Berbatov in front of me here. Do you know what I mean? Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
Like, big boys, aren't they?
Yeah, it was one of them.
Mate.
It was almost one of them. I felt to myself, I'm going to go there and give it a go. I had to. Yeah. Didn't want to shirk the challenge. But if it didn't work out for me, I'd leave there being a better player, having trying to get in front of these players. So I gave it a go. Three of them left at the end of that first season, didn't they?
Really?
Keno, Berber, and...
Berber went...
And Defoe
United
went to Portsmouth.
Who came in Crouchy?
No, it was...
Berber went in Christmas. Berber went in Christmas, didn't he?
Yeah.
January transfer window.
No, it was last day of the summer.
Yeah,
same
transfer.
Same one as Rubinho went to...
Man City. Yeah.
But it was Pavlyuchenko came in and Fraser Campbell.
Mate,
Fraser Campbell, young kid.
Yeah.
So we went from having four obviously recognised strikers to two really me and Pavlyuchenko.
Yeah.
So it completely changed.
Yeah, I was a Spurs fan as a kid, so I kind of like I've always looked out for him and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I remember like even back in the like Sergei Rebrov, players like that. Do you remember that playing for Spurs and stuff?
Yeah.
Pavlyuchenko, I was at Blues and he scored the goal that relegated us that season as well. That was the one where we had like 42 points or something at Birmingham, still got relegated. Gutted, mate.
Yeah, last game of the season.
Yeah.
Craig Gardner scored a rocket, didn't he? And
he did, yeah. And then Pavlyuchenko scored a deflected one last minute, dickhead. Never mind.
After Martin Jol, Juan de Ramos came in.
Yeah.
So I heard a little story recently, a little anecdote talking about from the England days, taking away your apple crumble or something.
Yeah, like he could be, again, another Capello, took away everything. Salt, pepper, condiments.
At club level.
At club level. Oh, so mate. You're talking about, honestly, Fozzy, you're talking about now dry pasta, no sauce. How can you eat pasta, no sauce?
Olive oil.
Olive oil.
Mate, that's still miserable. That's miserable.
one meat option, one fish option. That was it. No real selection. So he did that because he felt like everyone should be at a certain weight. But Michael Dawson, and he won't mind me saying this, he ended up on a drip because his diet changed that much. He just couldn't get enough
nutrients and all the good stuff into him.
So obviously
body went into shock a bit.
Collapsed. Yeah, collapsed. So weren't great. But I mean, to be fair to him, one day came in, he won the League Cup. Was done well to a point, but just tried to change too much too quickly. And then the start of the second season, just couldn't get going. And again, I get it from his perspective. He did lose Keno. Berbatov had scored 50 goals between them the season before. The forward gone. I think a couple of other players had left as well. And he was kind of left with, what do you expect me to do? But then he didn't start well at all.
Yeah. Is that when Harry Redknapp came in after this?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Obviously, we got to another League Cup final.
Yeah.
You got man of the match.
Yeah, that was man of the match
against Spurs, yeah.
I remember saving that shot from you where you cut in, you turned out and then drilled
that
it low.
That was late doors as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, late doors, drilled it low at my feet and I've like, my legs were apart, so I've had to just sort of like get them together a bit to stop it going through. Thankfully, just got them in time.
Yeah.
But yeah, mate, that was decent. I enjoyed that game. That was
yeah,
nice,
it was good fun to be fair. But no, it was, and when Harry came in, we got to think about, because a lot of people will ask me about the Harry Redknapp relationship. And when he first came in, couldn't have got off to a better start. I think I got off to 6-6. But you know when you're playing, but the only reason I'm still playing is because I'm scoring.
Yeah.
But you know what he's still looking for?
You know he's waiting.
He's waiting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember I think we played Fulham and I didn't play very well. Even though I'd had 6-6 before that, didn't play very well. And he took me off and that was it. Our relationship just, like, it was almost like, well, hold on, what have I've done before this? And then the following week, missed the chance against Portsmouth, the header, which says his wife can score it. And then it just deteriorated from there.
Really?
Just went down, yeah, completely spiraled out.
Was it that incident, does that bother you as a pro? Because obviously the way it comes across in the media, it was almost a bit of tongue-in-cheek in the fact that you missed a chance and he said, my missus could have scored that one. Did that upset you at the time?
A little bit, because I thought, well, hold on, like I was in quite good form. Do you know what I mean? Like, as I said, I'd scored loads of goals up until that point. And then I know it was off the cuff, but it was just like Harry being Harry. But I think what annoyed me was, if he'd have said it and then that would have been the end of it, I'd have been like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But because they blew it out of proportion where it was then everywhere, my back pages and all that, you then start thinking it's unnecessary. Do you know what I mean? It takes away the objective of what I'm trying to do. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, we spoke about it now and we laugh about it now, but at the time it was just unnecessary.
It kills you a bit, that really.
It does kill you.
Unnecessary, isn't it? Because you know that it's going to make news.
Exactly. And everywhere I'm going now, you get people, random people in the street going, oh, my wife could have scored that. Mate. And they think it's funny.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's funny.
Of course you don't. Friggin'
hell. Do you know what I mean?
It's your job, isn't it? At the end of the day, but like you said, you'd been smashing it. And then you get a couple of bad games or whatever, or even a bad, you know,
a bad game.
Missing a chance. Have you ever had it, Foz, when someone's manager's kind of had a dig at you in public?
Nah, not really. Like I say, the only thing I can remember really is when at United, Alex Ferguson did it kind of to my face.
And you told me this the other day. Yeah. I'd never heard this story before. You told me this the other day.
That
go on.
Man City like derby one where we've lost 4-3 and I chucked like two in. It was horrible, right? And he didn't know I was here and he's watching the goals in the changing rooms on the telly and I'm having a stinker, mate. Goals are just going through my crumble hands, like, kind of. It was horrible. And I heard him go, "Oh, time for a rest, lad." And I'm like sitting there going, oh no, that's me. He's talking about
time
me.
Time for a rest, lad.
Yeah, but that kind of gets in your head a bit. But even that, like, that got in my head to the point where I'm thinking, well, I ain't playing again here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he's got that in his head and he's thinking that about me, then he's got to have doubts.
Yeah.
He's got to have doubts.
But surely you'll have managers that you play, like you said, you're scoring, but they're almost waiting. And is that just because you're just not their type of player?
Yeah.
Or they just want to bring in their own guy?
I think a little bit of both. Like, Harry bought Defoe back in the January, didn't he?
Didn't he?
He brought him back. So obviously that helped him of get what he wanted to do. But you're right, even though I was scoring, he just didn't, like, I just wasn't his type of player. Like, he wanted to bring, he'd had successful times at Portsmouth with Defoe and Crouchy. So he wanted them to again. So obviously he kept being linked with Crouchy. So Crouchy ultimately ended up coming at the end of that season. Obviously moved on, but it was just one of them where I just knew that it weren't going to fit. So when I came back the following preseason, when he was still there, I had a conversation and he was like, listen, I'm prepared to let you go. I was like, well, you're going to have to help me here, because at the end of the day, we know what Daniel Levy is like. He makes it so hard for you to leave.
Really, yeah. Is that a thing? Is that a genuine thing with Spurs?
Genuine. Yeah. But I said, if you want me to leave, you're going to have to help me, because he's not going to make it easy
for me. Of course,
me.
Yeah. So you want him basically to go in and say, right, we're selling him.
Yeah, exactly.
So get
rid
of him, sell him for a decent price. Obviously, you don't like skimp on it or whatever, but get him out the door.
Yeah, and I'll bring in who I want to bring in. And that's why it worked.
Wow. Were you in the? Was Harry Kane in the youth team coming through?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have seen him, because back then we was at Loughborough Lane training ground, where it was like the first team would train like
away
back,
from it, separate, from
separate, yeah, miles away. Yeah,
I heard a lot about Harry Kane when he was younger. You know that nobody ever could have like predicted he was going to do what he did. You know, a lot of players who were with him in that youth team said, don't get me wrong, he was decent, and he had a bit and blah, blah, blah. But to go from that to what he is now, where like I remember, like, any time I play against Harry Kane, I'm thinking, mate, he could score from anywhere, this guy.
Yeah.
Anywhere, left foot, right foot, he can absolutely dig the life out of it. Like, just baller, strong as a like, holds it up. Well, what a player. Beautiful.
Very good, very good. And then how about the Sunderland move? So tell us how that kind of came about.
Yes, it was one of them where obviously finally they agreed the fee. Spurs and Sunderland, although I got kicked off the plane, I don't know about at Spurs. So I was.
No, we don't know. This
one didn't come up.
Yeah, so we were going to Hong Kong on pre season.
Yeah.
Now, I've been arguing all day saying, "What if you're going to sell me to Sunderland?" Because I've made it abundantly clear where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Why are you going to take me halfway around the world? Because I've got Tottenham saying to me, if they don't put this money in, you're not going, you're coming to Hong Kong. And I've got Sunderland saying, if he gets on the plane to go to Hong Kong, we're not doing the deal.
Oh, wow.
So I remember sitting there going, oh, damn, on the phone to Harry, on the phone to Daniel. I can't remember the chief executive name. Who's the guy who went to United from Spurs? Chief executive.
From Spurs?
He was at Spurs and he went to United. I can't remember his name.
I don't know.
Can't help you.
Yeah. Well, he was at Spurs, and I remember, like, we were at the airport, all the lads are winding me up now. So he's getting in my head. Mate. They're going, Bentley, you're going to Hong Kong. I'm like, I'm not going to Hong Kong. He's going. Aaron Lennon and JJ and Tom Anderson were worse. But you're going on. We're boarding the planes. Like, Bentley, I told you, I'm like, I'm not going.
Yeah, so they're joking at this point, right? But you are genuinely really snapping now. Yeah. You're snapping now. Because this is real life.
Real
now.
Life.
This is real life.
They get on the plane. They shut the door. I'm thinking, I'm going to Hong Kong. I'm going, what is, I've obviously got my phone out. What is going on? He comes walking from the back of the plane.
Levy?
No, not Levy.
Edward, was it Edward?
No, it was someone. I need to figure his name. But he comes walking from the back of the plane and goes, right, Darren, we've had a deal accepted now, so you can get off the plane.
And they got you on the plane.
I'm on the plane, sitting in my seat, doors shut.
So what's happened here then?
So I've gone, all right, so I've got up now. The boys are going, oh, hey, and I'm like, good luck, lads, see you soon. They've had to open the door. Obviously, I've got no transport to get home, so I've had to get a taxi.
Sort yourself out.
Yeah, from a taxi from Gatwick to my house.
Get some stuff.
But then, no, that's not even the worst part about it. So I do that. They take off. I'm sitting in my house now. Monday passes. Tuesday passes. Wednesday passes. Nothing. Thursday, Friday. They still can't agree a fee, right?
Oh, wow.
Gets to about 6-7 days later. That's when I put the tweet out. When I say, oh, I don't want to go to Hull. I don't want to go to Stoke. I want to go to Sunderland. So we'll leave
you
stuff.
You did this?
Yeah.
Put that out.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
So I stopped effing about. So obviously I got fined for that, putting that tweet out. The deal to Sunderland doesn't get done.
What was the fine? Week's wages?
Yeah, week's wages. No, yeah. 2 weeks' wages.
Wow,
that's heavy. Right, but no, they didn't tell me that at the time. They waited till I got to Sunderland and then said, oh, we're only going to pay you this because you've been fined 2 weeks. But the deal didn't get done until the boys had got back from Hong Kong.
Oh, mate. How long they've had that there?
Ten days. So I had 10 days doing nothing.
This is what we were speaking to Mahata Malonga about recently on the podcast and saying, this just wouldn't go in any other industry, would it? No. It wouldn't happen.
Like, no. People don't realise this is people's lives. Like, Benty's moving from London up to Sunderland.
Yeah.
You need to get something sorted. Yeah. You've got to get like a place to live. Like, you know what I mean? Mm. If you've got family, you've got to take them up. You pull them out of school. All that kind of stuff, mate.
Yeah. My God. At the time, I was on my own, so it was all right. But it was still just a ball late because it could have been done weeks before that.
Of course.
But, and I didn't end up signing for Sunderland until... I think we had one pre-season game and then it was the Premier League start next season.
Mate.
The next week.
No way.
So they dragged it out as long as they could.
All the pre-season. I didn't really do a pre-season. I did a bit with Spurs, but when I got off the plane, the moment I got off the plane, nothing.
Mate, that's naughty. That 18 and a half mil, was it, in total?
You went up to 16 and a half,
16
was it?
Mil, yeah.
I think it rose to...
And this is just purely Daniel Levy haggling over a few million.
Penny out of Canyon.
That's what he does, isn't it?
Mate. I know, but still, somebody's going to have to... somewhere down the road, this will catch up with people, this will. Do you know what I mean? You can't treat people like that. This is real life, like I say.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but the counter-argument is the contract's there.
Yeah, true that, true that.
Sign a shorter-term contract. Yeah, just to play devil's advocate.
He turns around and goes, actually, then, do you know what? I ain't going. I'm going to chill here and my back hurts so I can just sit here and just chill and take my money.
Yeah,
people do that. Do you know what I mean? They do. Yeah. It gets to a point where it gets to a real principle thing where people, I've seen it, where people go, I'll tell you what, and screw you, I'm just going to sit there and I'll say my back's hurt every day. And I've seen players
What was the lad at
it,
Chelsea?
Mate.
What was the lad at Chelsea?
I've seen players do it.
What was the lad at Chelsea? Was it Winston Bogart?
Winston Bogart.
Did about 3 years, didn't
he? Exactly. Lizard Holland. Fly over every morning.
Dog in. Commuted from Holland.
Flew over. Flew over.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, flew over.
That's unreal. Okay, so you're now you're at Sunderland. So would I be right in saying these were your prime Darren Bent years?
Yeah, I mean that first season was definitely one where because obviously what had gone on at Spurs, it was almost like a drive in a drive. And I can remember Steve Bruce saying to me, "You don't need any motivation this season. Just go and score goals." Yeah. And that was it. Do concentrate on that. The rest will take care of itself. So it was almost like from the very first game, I just wanted to go and show people. Like obviously, I was a good player and that I could score goals, and the whole Spurs thing was just one of them things that happens. And as you said there, it only worked out well for both parties because I think they got themselves in the Champions League Spurs that season.
Yeah.
And I went on to obviously score the most goals I've ever scored in my career in one season.
Did you score against Spurs that season?
Twice. No, but the worst part about it was, though, I scored two after 16 minutes or something crazy.
Oh.
Got two more penalties in the game, missed them both.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I could have had four. Gomez saved.
Mate, he's the man though, mate. I don't even blame you. He saved penalty right, left and centre. His arms were incredible, weren't they? So, the longest arms I've ever seen. His arms were that much longer than mine.
Yeah.
Mate, he used to make saves in training where I'd go, I can't make that save, Gomez. I can't reach what you can reach. Like, he's ridiculous.
Yeah. So what a guy. He saved the two, so I could have had four.
Wow, Gomi, what a friggin' legend. Steve Bruce, legend, yeah.
Yeah, he was good. Brilliant for me that season. Yeah, really, really good for me that season. As I said, kept it simple.
Yeah.
Didn't complicate it. Told me what he wanted. Put a good team around me that could supply me chances. We had a good team there as well. Yeah, we probably underachieved because we should have finished inside the top 10.
Who were you playing? Who was in the team when you were there?
So it was like Steve Malbronk was one.
Yeah, wow.
Player.
Yeah, big Kenwyn Jones.
Yeah. Oh, mate,
your
Kenwyn.
Mate.
Yeah,
big Kenwyn. Who else did we have? We had people like Kieran Richardson.
Was horrible. He was so strong. Kieran Richardson, solid as your light left back.
Do you remember Loric Sana? Captain Marseille.
Who?
So we had Loric Sana, right? We bought him from Marseille. This guy, for the first 6 months, was like action man. Captain, was doing everything. We were guarded to 10 men, made no difference. He was like N'Golo Kante, mopping up headers, tackles. Got to Christmas time, January time, and he just went to Steve Bruce's office and went, "Do you know what? I can't do it anymore." Like,
what?
His body's packed in.
Nah.
He gave it everything for that first half of the season.
Battered himself.
I went, "Listen, you probably best you sell me maybe because I can't do it anymore." So that was it. We never saw him again second half of the season.
But he still stayed at the club, just played.
Came on here and there, but he just couldn't get to that intensity.
But the
first half of the season, man possessed.
Really?
Yeah.
It's amazing. See, this is, people don't realise the brain is the most important part of football, isn't it? It's the most important muscle, for sure. If you're not right in your head to go and do it the way that you know you can do it or should be doing
That's it.
You ain't going to be the player that you think that you want to be, are you? You can't touch the sides unless you're ready in your head. Massive. No. Really important.
And what was Sunderland like as a club, as a place?
Yeah, again, perfect landing spot for me, I think. I wanted to get as far away from London as possible. I wanted to go to somewhere where all they care about is football. And if you've been to the North East, that's all everybody wants to talk about. Football. Even Newcastle, because at that time, my first season, they were in the Championship. So they weren't even a factor.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just about us, Sunderland, being in the Premier League. Yeah. But yeah, great place. Everyone was so friendly, talked about football. Good team ethics there, good team culture as well, because a lot of us were from other areas.
Yeah.
So we've all obviously congregated at
So you've got to make friends and you've got to go out together, you've got to go to dinner, all
honestly,
that.
Honestly, everything that first season was brilliant. Brilliant, everything.
Oh, I love it, Benty. This is nice, mate. This is a belting one, by the way. I'm really enjoying this. You're top I told you were led. Friggin' love you, mate. All right, and so Sunderland, this is where the famous beach ball...
Yeah.
Please, explain it from your point of view.
So I can remember... I remember getting the ball short and spinning it off.
So Sunderland versus Liverpool,
At Stadium of Light.
At Stadium of Light.
We're playing really well at this time. Liverpool are having a bit of a ropey one, but we're playing really well at this point in the season. So they come there to us. They've got a lot of injuries as well. Like Steven Gerrard doesn't play.
Nice. You're buzzing when players like that are playing.
Yeah, when we see he's not on the team sheet. And I think maybe even, I don't know if Torres would have been there at the time or Suarez, but there was another big hitter missing. And we went, lads, if ever there was a chance to get a result.
How good was Suarez, by the way?
Incredible.
Mate, how good was Suarez?
Incredible.
I still don't think people talk about him at those top
because he didn't play
level.
Over here for like but 8 or 9 years, isn't it?
He was an animal, weren't he?
Everything.
Animal.
Touch.
Horrible as well.
Yeah, he's right. Horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible. Yeah. But it was one of them where we were said in the change room, lads, if ever there was a time we were going to get a result against Liverpool, it's today.
Yeah.
We know that Carragher's still there. We know there's other players, but you take the cog out of that wheel, Steven Gerrard, it's not the same. And there was, I said, I can't remember who the other big hitter was. So anyway, we started off the game really well. We're playing really well on top, but we just can't create that opportunity. Anyway, I drop short and I spin it out wide to Andy Reid. He goes down the right, the line. He pushes it. It goes past the defender. So I get myself in the box. I pull off Glenn Johnson a little bit. As the cross is coming in towards me, it takes a little deflection and that bounces up just ahead of me. So in my head, I'm always the same. Hit the target.
Yeah.
Hit the target. Yeah. If you hit the target, you've got a chance. So I hit it and it's going on target, but I don't get really any real connection on it. Like, it's a good strike, but he's just going to do that and he's a goalkeeper. Yeah, yeah. Glenn Johnson sticks his foot out, it goes past him. I could just remember seeing the big beach ball behind his foot. And I remember it hitting the beach ball, going that way, and the beach ball going that way. And I remember Pepe Reina goes to the beach ball, goes to save it, and the ball just pops over his shoulder. Yeah, yeah. And I remember him going, huh? And at the time, because it never happened before, nobody knew the rules.
Yeah.
So as I've run off celebrating, it's not even factored in my head that it shouldn't count. And we all go crazy. Half time, I'm walking in, the referee comes running up to me. Like, Bentley, did it hit the beach ball? I went, yeah, I think so. I went, why?
I think so.
I said, yeah, I think so. He went, oh no, like, I don't think it should have counted. And I remember saying to him.
Did you see him then looking? You just did. You went, oh no. And he sort of looked off into space. Like, I can see the refo doing that now, thinking, oh no, I'm going to get told off here.
Exactly.
What have I done?
And I said to him, well, listen, I said, nothing you can do about it now.
Unlucky.
But even after it happened and after the game, I didn't really think much of it. I just thought, okay, it's one of them mad things.
Yeah.
But the reaction massive. For people, it went blew up everywhere.
Yeah, it was massive.
It was massive.
Massive.
Mate, it was a question on it was the a chase. Question on the chase.
ice cream van.
what got in the, it was basically what was in the way of Darren Bent's goal that went past Liverpool, and there was an ice cream truck.
That's what she chose.
A beach ball and some else, and she chose the ice cream.
Arguably the worst answer ever on any game show. Ice cream van. Got ice cream van on the pitch.
She chose the ice cream.
the worst answer. But no, as I said, I just thought it was one of them rare things. But the reaction afterwards was incredible.
Yeah,
it was insane.
Massive. Liverpool as well. Wow.
Yeah,
it's class. I love it.
Great time in Liverpool. Villa, big signing.
Yeah,
18 mil up to 24. Alex McLeish, your old gaffer.
Ah, were you there when McLeish?
Yeah, he came in second. Gerard Houllier signed me.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And
okay.
I mean, Gerard is one of the very best. Yeah. Even though I got to work with him for a short period before he got ill, he was what you call a proper manager in terms of attention to detail. Like little things where you wouldn't even think it, but he'd go, if you just do this, and like I'll give you an example, which it does make me laugh when I think about it, is that, you know, it's like if the fullbacks have got the ball, if they've not got a pass, you've got to run down the channel just to give them an option.
Yeah.
First time Luke Young gets the ball, he puts it down there, I run out there, he stops the training session. He pulls me in, he goes, why are you running out there? I said, well, Gaffer, obviously Luke Young had no pass on, so I'm just giving him an
helping
option.
Helping him out.
He went to me, no, I didn't buy you to stand up, run out there. I buy you to stay in there and score goals. Don't worry about all that. Let Ashley Young and the wide players do that.
All right.
You just stay in there. From that, I don't think I've ever run a channel again after that. Never again. But he was just saw little things. Like he said, I didn't buy you to run out there.
Yeah.
I bought you to stay in there and
score
goals.
That's gold for you, that, isn't it? That is gold for you because that basically means he wants you to score goals. So midfielders, you better get running. You better get working your socks off, right? Yeah. You don't even dream of doing that out there. You just stay there and wait for it to come to you,
Is that like when you say, give it to the good players?
Give it to the good players, mate.
Just said to me, just stay there. Don't worry, but I didn't buy you to do all that nonsense out there.
That's gold, isn't it?
Yeah, so little things like that, but he was just, I said, a great man, great person.
Yeah,
always cared, not just cared about the person on the pitch. He wanted to know what he was doing outside. Because obviously I'd come down from Newcastle, what I was doing in the evenings, what was I up to, have I got any family?
You settled down, all that
kind of
stuff.
How's my mum, how's my dad? I was, honestly,
that's nice,
what a person.
Yeah, I like that. That means a lot. It goes a long way, that does, you know.
Yeah.
Really does go a long way, that.
But yeah,
really
Big Ed came in the second season. I liked him.
Yeah, he's nice, isn't he?
He's a nice guy, to be fair.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. Same old.
Backs against the wall, though. He was a Blues manager. Villa fans, regardless, would have had to get into the Champions League for them to accept him.
It was. Remember at the time? It was when Benitez signed for Everton.
Yeah.
And it was the same, and you just went...
It don't work.
It's just not going to work, is it?
When he went to Newcastle, Steve Bruce, Newcastle, Sunderland, links. It just don't work, does
never
it?
Gonna, ever going to happen.
Never going to work.
Don't know why they even bother.
I know, I'm with you, mate. I'm with you.
Good club, though. Enjoy your time there.
Yeah, lovely club, Aston Villa. Massive football club. Massive fan base. good part of the world as well, the Midlands. I mean, I couldn't believe the size of the stadium. The training ground, second to none.
Lovely stadium as well.
Lovely stadium.
I love playing at Villa Park. I do. It's like proper old school
stadium. Yeah, and I always found the Villa fans would give you a chance.
Yeah.
They'd always give you a chance because you've seen players go down there, struggle at first, but they'll give you a chance to kind of turn it around. Yeah. Really, really good supporters and good football club.
Yeah, I'm with you, mate.
And then on to Derby. So you had four seasons, obviously, with Derby.
You there 4 years at Derby?
Yeah, 3.5 years.
Yeah,
with some loans thrown in as well.
Yeah.
And then, how old were you when you retired?
35.
I want to ask this question, right? Because this is something that really sort of intrigues me at the minute, Bentley. Okay, so I'm getting to that age, right, where I'm sort of, retirement's there, I can see it, it's coming soon kind of thing, but I don't know when I'm going to feel it. Like, I want to keep going, I'm enjoying myself, like, I'm having a nice time. It seems to work for me, yeah? What was it that made you go, I'm not doing this anymore, I don't want to do it?
I think part of it, when I realised I couldn't do the same things I used to be able to do.
Yeah.
That was an issue.
Could you physically feel
that?
Yeah.
Like in and around the box, finishing, not a problem. Could do that now. It's not a problem. But it was getting to that point. Do you know what I mean? Having to make the runs in behind, to do all the movements you have to do to get yourself in that position. And then it's almost like when pre-season, you've got guys that like can't even control the ball properly. Not great footballers.
Yeah.
And they're just flying past me in training.
Yeah.
And that's when I said, you know what? Enough's enough. I'm not hanging on for the sake of... just keep getting paid. I said, no way. My pride was taking a battering every single day. So I went, you know what? Enough's enough. So I just went, you know what? No.
A lot of players say this about pre-season. When you get older, you know, pre-season seems to be the thing that makes everybody go, I'm not doing this anymore. No. I'm not doing it anymore.
Like, I didn't mind the hard work, but it was just a case of, like, my brain's telling me when the ball's at my feet, I could do it, it's not a problem. But it was just trying to get about the pitch and these youngsters are just flying, ping, 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 ping. And it was like, no, enough's enough.
Miles on the clock though as well, isn't it? You've done it for many, many years, haven't you?
It's just one of them where it is hard. I think that's the hardest thing for any athlete to kind of realise. When you realise you're not the same as you once were, it's tough.
But do you think it was the right decision at the right time?
Yeah, because I think, obviously I've gone on to do the media side of things.
Yeah.
Who knows what would have happened after. If I'd have waited and carried on hanging on, and then eventually came out, and maybe I've never got the opportunities I've got now.
Yeah.
But the fact I felt I'd come at the right time, because now it almost feels like the media side of things is the most fashionable thing on the planet.
Yeah, well, mate, you slipped into it like an absolute dream as well. Well,
when did you start planning post-football?
Did you plan?
What age?
It was, and I guess Derby, I've got a lot to Derby to thank them for, because he at the time, obviously, which is why the club's probably in the state that it's in, unfortunately. He started a thing called Rams TV.
Yeah.
Where he did try to take on Sky, Mel Morris.
Yeah.
But they were doing like stuff on the Friday, pre-shows about the games. They had obviously studio guests before the games. So I started doing a lot of that kind of stuff, in the studio, talking about the games. So that helped me. We were doing a little bit of Sky. And then obviously people saw me on Sky, and that led to one thing or another. So although I didn't come out and say, I'm going to do the media when I retire, I just kind of fell into it. I tried the coaching. Wasn't me. I know it's not me.
Why wasn't it you?
Just like, I liked it when I was there on the training pitch, helping the kids out, training the coach and the kids. But the moment I left the training ground, it was like, okay, out of sight, out of mind.
Really, yeah.
Whereas when I do the media side of things, I'm constantly thinking about what I can say, what I can
watching
do.
Watching stuff. It gives you interest that you have to watch stuff.
Exactly. It's different. So it was almost like, I think to be a good coach, you've got to live and breathe. As footballers, you've got to live and breathe it. And I wasn't doing that with a coach.
Well, you've just done it for 20 years as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've just played football for 20 years, like probably longer for you. Like, did you go for the youth setup and all that kind of thing? So you were even longer, where you do it for 20 years and at the end of 20, you think, I don't know if I want to go and do coaching where it's even longer hours than what I have been doing. Still the most unsociable, like weekends, don't even think about it. Like, I don't know if I want that, to be honest with you.
You're not the same money either, are you, as well?
Yeah, exactly. Much less money now as well. But you're talking about the media. So obviously we I love you on TalkSport, mate. I do. You and Goldstein on Drive, frigging incredible on TalkSport. Absolutely buzz off you. What is it like working with these guys? Because these are like people at the top of their game at the minute. So I'm going to throw some names at you here, right? And just tell me what you think of them, all right? Or anything.
Good.
Just, you know what I mean? Laura Woods. Let's start with Laura Woods. Absolute legend.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Woodsy. It's funny because when I first started working at TalkSport in the old building, one of my first shows was with Woodsy.
Yeah.
And then they gave me and Woodsy a show on a Saturday night called the phone-in.
Yeah,
it's called the full-time phone-in on a Saturday night. It was 7 till 9:30. So we did that for a season together.
Were you talking to all the fans and all that
kind of stuff? Yeah. It was good. Right? We really enjoyed it. But of course, she's gone from strength to strength. After that, they said to her, listen, we want you to do the breakfast show, which is a big gig.
Yeah.
But she's top quality to work with, easy to talk to, doesn't try and hog the limelight, because that's a big thing with presenters. Sometimes they want their voice to be always heard. She's not like that. She'll allow you to talk, give her a point of view, but one of the best in the business for sure.
Yeah, she's game changing for women. I love it.
Massively. She's knocking down doors for fun.
It's incredible. I love it. Who've we got? Alan Brazil.
Do you know what? I've not really worked with Al that much, but great guys. He's a stalwart of TalkSport. Only 20 years you're talking about. Funny.
One of the originals, mate. He started it, basically, didn't he?
Yeah. One of the originals. Great guy. Has got a cult following.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when he's not, when he's on the radio, people don't like it.
Yeah.
So even the decision to give Woodsy the 3 days, him the two, at first went down
was
like
it,
a little
really?
Bit.
Yeah, controversial, yeah.
People just love listening. Not because he's...
It's like Hawksby and Jacobs, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, which is why they've had the same slot for 20 years nearly.
People like routine though, don't they, mate? And people like routine.
I think it's not even so much his footballing knowledge, Brazil's. It's because of him as a person.
Yeah.
Makes mistakes for fun.
Yeah, he loves it
but
though.
That's what you want to hear, didn't you? Yeah. People love it. So yeah, he's a legend of
it's his
sport.
Anecdotes, isn't it? I'd say what I want. Well, one of my bucket list things is to go to Cheltenham races with Alan Brazil.
Oh, yeah, that'd be world
that would be
it's legendary.
Whoa, I don't think you could last 5 days. He did all 5 days this year, you know.
He's an animal, isn't he?
All 4 days. Who've we got? Ali McCoist.
Legend again.
Yeah.
Really good guy, Ali. Probably the most likable person when it comes
really,
to...
Really, yeah.
Yeah, people love him on CoComs. They love him when, on TalkSport Breakfast. Just one of them guys. I don't know, and I don't know how he does it because to get up at 6 a.m. as much as he does is difficult.
Yeah.
But whenever he comes on a full of life, full of beans, and that helps me sometimes because sometimes you go on, you know what it's like. You might be a bit tired. You might have had a late night the night before and you go and you need someone to pick you up.
Yeah.
He's that one who can just pick you up. Yeah, he could pick you up and put you in a good place. So yeah, he's another one of them legends.
I think he's my favourite commentator at the minute. I could listen to him all day long. He's incredible, isn't he?
I'm with you.
He is incredible. He just says it like, he just says it how it should be said. Like, dead easy to understand, all that kind of stuff. Top class. Goldstein.
Legend. Like, one of my favourites. I mean, I hate giving him any kind of credit because he's. But talk about somebody that when you talk about an unbelievable broadcaster, he can take anything and change it into anything.
Really?
And when I say that, all it takes is someone to walk in the room and drop a coffee or spill something on the desk. He'll make a topic out of that, and he'll just go, "Oh, what's the funniest thing someone spilled on a desk?" And people just love him. Yeah. And people just
thinks on his feet.
Thinks on his feet, but because he's almost like one of the people, he says issues that everyone goes through. Do you know what I mean? That everyone would
relatable.
Go relatable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's one of them that you'd have to say...
He's been doing it a long time.
A long time as well. But
how old is he? How old is Goldstein?
46, 47.
He was
soccer
AM,
to be fair.
He was soccer AM and everything.
Yeah.
He's still at Barnett's world class.
Yeah.
But yeah, sports bar was his thing, but moving him to drive is a masterstroke because more people hear him. But
I love it. I listen to drive all the time with you two because your chemistry together, mate.
He's a genius.
I miss him on Sports Bar.
See? And I think
listen
the numbers.
To it every night. Yeah. Listen to it every night.
Yeah. Simon Jordan.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And when you say brilliant, completely different to Goldstein. Goldstein's brilliant in his own right, Woodsy. But when you're talking about matters around business in football, agents, managers, the hiring process, buying a football club, there's no one better to speak to. And the way he puts it as well, he uses certain words, you go, I don't know what that means. But he's just so clever in the way that he knows exactly what's going on. That if I'm unsure about anything, off the pitch, you listen to Jordan.
He's a go-to, isn't he?
He's a go-to.
Yeah.
He could work for any broadcast we wanted on the planet.
I think I could go into an argument with Simon Jordan, and I know I'm right, I know it. I know I'm right. I've got facts and figures in front of me, right? And I know I'm right. He would still make me feel at the end of this argument that I am wrong, and I would be agreeing with every word he said. Yeah. He is that good, isn't he?
Sounds familiar, that does. Do you know what I mean? Got one of them at home.
I know, yeah. All right then, mate. Let's go for some quickfire questions, okay? What is your guilty pleasure? Do you have something that people might not know about you that you might like or watch or blah, blah, blah?
Genre music or...
Anything. Is there anything that you're like, oh, that's a bit weird and quirky, but I'm owning it?
Sitting in the loft with his trainers.
That's nice. That's nice. That's
probably when you talk about genre music, listen, I love hip hop, I love rap, R&B, but I really like the Bee Gees.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, nice. A lot of people know that, but yeah.
There you go. The perfect answer. Yeah. Guilty pleasure, the Bee Gees.
Yeah, I like the Bee Gees. Yeah, little Bee Gees here and there.
All right, boom. Your favourite cheat meal?
Favourite cheat meal has got to be Five Guys Burgers.
There's one here.
I've seen it. Five Guys, incredible.
Yeah. I've only had it once and one of the best burgers.
You've
I've
only had one once?
Yeah, only had it once. Yeah, there's not, where are we from, Leamington? The nearest one's Birmingham.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so you got to go all the way there to get one. So, yeah, but I'm with you, mate. Absolutely.
Five Guys.
Your idol growing up?
Ian Wright.
Yeah, boom. We've done a pod with him. He is incredible.
Yeah, Ian Wright's the... he's the reason why I wanted to play football. Yeah. Incredible Arsenal fan. He's the one reason why I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure of working with him quite a few times on Premier League. But you talk about an icon, fantastic footballer. But yeah, he is my absolute hero.
What a human being as well.
I was a Palace fan.
And when
he moved across to Arsenal, that's when I went to Arsenal and have been Arsenal ever since.
Did not know that. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything on your bucket list that you still haven't done? Not in football, like afterwards. This is something that you really want
to
do.
Go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Big NFL fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, big NFL fan, yeah. But for whatever reason, TalkSport always send a crew to the Super Bowl.
And never on the list. You never get the nod.
Never on the nod. But I'm making sure this next one, I'm going to be on that list.
Yeah, I reckon 100%. We're going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
We do a little bit of work with them. And we said, like, post-football, we want to do big sporting events.
Yeah,
Super Bowl. NFL, Masters.
Yeah.
And kind of go and document it.
Nothing's bigger than the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Super Bowl. Yeah. Lovely. Go-to karaoke song.
Luther Vandross, Never Too Much.
Never too much.
I like it. If you weren't a footballer, what would you have been?
Well, I was quite big on the old the athletic scene. Like, yeah. I used to do long jump for England, yeah.
Did you? England?
Yeah, I went to English schools, yeah, and did all that. So it probably would have been going down that route.
Athletics, way kind of thing. Decent, mate. Favourite holiday destination?
Los Angeles.
Yeah, okay.
Biggest advice for your teenage self?
This is the bit deep question. We normally save this for last. You've jumped
have
in
I,
there with
have
this.
I nipped in there, have
You've
I?
You nipped in there, yeah.
You don't like that one.
The teenage me. But even though I was dedicated to football, I really was dedicated, I'd probably be even more dedicated.
Really?
And I'm talking about diet-wise, because back then, you didn't really know too much. You knew what you could and can't eat, but when you're 16, you just think, the weight will always fall off.
Yeah.
So even though I was dedicated, I'd probably be even more dedicated, do you know what I mean?
To the fully craft. Commit, give fully, it everything.
Fully, even though I feel like I did,
yeah.
When you look back now, you still go, ooh, maybe I could have been a bit better there.
Yeah, okay, nice, I like that. Your biggest phobia, do you have any phobias?
I don't like spiders.
Yeah. Most people say this. Or if I have snakes.
Mm. But I also have a pet snake, so snakes don't bother me.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why do you have a pet snake?
Because I was bored. when I was at Charlton, I had a pet snake. I bought a pet snake because I was bored.
Oh, so you were an adult, you had a pet snake?
I was an adult, Charlton, I bought a pet snake.
What kind?
It was called a Corolla snake. Big orange thing.
Nah, I don't like them, mate. I can't.
No.
Do you know what I don't like about snakes? Do you know what it is? Snakes don't have that part of the brain where they can love something or like something. They haven't got that in their brain. I don't know what it's called, but they aren't capable of loving something. Do you know what I mean?
What, so they just attack?
Yeah, so they constantly, they can tolerate.
Yeah.
Like, the maximum they can do is tolerate something, but they can't, they can't love something.
Yeah.
And that boggles my head. Like, I want a dog to, absolutely see me and buzz off me and stuff. Nah, snakes, no chance, mate. That's a good way of putting it. Tolerate. They can tolerate max, that's it. Right, any superstitions?
Superstitions, do you know what? I haven't.
No,
I'm trying to think. I guess when I was playing, certainly at Sunderland, and the ball was flying in the back of the net every other second, I listened to the same playlist and I had to listen to the same song at the same point of the journey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, do you know what I mean? So obviously, I was in a form of my life, so I thought, you know what it's like.
Yeah.
You always look for that one thing that it must be.
I did that, so I've got to do it again. And then...
So I've got to do it again. So I kept doing it all season.
Yeah. So that's when I definitely hit this, a superstition, you know that. Yeah.
When I hit this bridge, this song better be on by the time I get there.
Yeah. Best moment in your whole football career?
It's probably behind you on the screen there, representing your country.
Yeah, debut.
Debut, yeah. I think
scoring the first goal?
Yeah, but I think making your actual debut, because you almost feel like scoring my first goal made me feel like I deserve to be at that level.
Yeah.
But being in the squad was just like, wow. When I look at I've got a picture of the first squad that I was in. When you look at some of the superstars, to be standing alongside them when I'm playing for Charlton and these guys are at the biggest clubs in the world, that's when I thought to myself, you've done all right here.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it, that. When you're playing for someone like Charlton and then you're in with the big boys, you're with England, that's a proud moment, that, isn't it? Yeah, like
massive.
And then we turn it on its head and say, lowest moment in your career.
Oh, the lowest would have probably been... Do you know what, the lowest, and this is going to sound strange because a lot of people would probably go back to the Redknapp comment, but probably the lowest point was when I fell out with Paul Lambert at Villa. I should have done more to not let him just kind of push me aside and then it kind of just fizzle out. Probably that's the one.
Just fight a bit more.
Do you know what I mean? Because you know, it's like you're stubborn, you're annoyed with the manager. I should have just gone, you know what, it's not about him now, it's about myself.
Yeah.
And even if he doesn't want to pick me, I'm still going to do everything I can to make sure that I'm still up for the fight.
It's hard, that,
though,
isn't
it? It is hard. And that's the one thing I wish I'd have done.
Yeah, that's nice. Good answer.
What about your hardest defender you played against? Hardest and best.
Hardest would have been a guy called, I think his name is Chris Morgan.
Yeah,
Sheffield United. United. Yeah, horrible.
Big blockhead.
Like
on
blockhead, yeah. Back then, where he was made of granite. Like he was
like a caveman.
Horrible. Studs in your back. And he was the horriblest.
He looked nasty, didn't he?
He was nasty.
He was.
The best would be, from a domestic point of view, would be probably Rio Ferdinand.
Yeah.
Incredible, wasn't he? Elegant. Lovely. Just love didn't help you out though in that Man City 4-3 though. Do you know favours?
Did me no favours whatsoever. And he was world class at flinging his arms up as well, saying it's not my fault. Is that dickhead there? World class at doing
you
that.
You took the heat off him now.
Best goal you've scored, Bentley. We're nearly there, by the way. You're killing it.
For best goal I've ever scored would be probably a volley when I was at Derby against Wolves. Dropped over my shoulder.
I think I remember it, yeah. And I think I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, on Sky, yeah, volley.
Wow, right towards the end of your career, yeah.
Right towards the end, yeah.
Wow.
Before that, I was tapping merchant.
I don't know, mate. 100 Premier League goals, says otherwise. The most hostile ground you played at?
Oh, Millwalls, by some distance. Yeah. And it doesn't even matter if it's not full. They can still make it as hostile. Yeah. And to the point where I can remember going there for Aston Villa in a cup game midweek. We went 1-0 up and then we got beat because certain players on our pitch just crumbled.
Folded.
Because there was flares going off. The linesman got hit with like a flare.
Wow.
He went down there to change. No one wanted to go over there to take a throw on. And in the end, they just bullied us.
Really?
Obviously, the team, Millwall team, fed off the crowd. Couldn't get anywhere near them. Got beat 2-1.
Wow. Mate, people don't realise that it's a thing.
It's an actual thing. And it was a night game as well. So they'd be drinking all day.
Mate.
So you can imagine.
Yeah, mate. An FA Cup match as well. It's like a big... That's at Wembley.
Yeah.
That's a big old day
horrible.
Out.
Yeah. Here's one good... I think I know you're going to say, but funniest teammate, Joker.
Funniest teammate throughout my career would probably be... Jonathan Woodgate was funny.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was a funny character. Really, really good guy. Always cracking jokes. And to be fair, he helped me because of his personality. He helped me in my time at Spurs, where I was finding it difficult. He was brilliant.
Everyone says he's a good lad.
He's top man.
Yeah.
Can I just ask about David Bentley? I've heard some good stories there.
He was funny, but he was when I played with Bents at Spurs, he was kind of a weird one because he was going for a real kind of transition where he'd just come from Blackburn, was flying at Blackburn. Couldn't really get it together at Spurs. Just didn't. I mean, you
a lot of money as well.
A lot of money. You see the magic he did against Arsenal, the volley. But he still, it just couldn't get any consistency. Yeah. And I think it started to wane on him a little bit.
Okay.
And it just, in the end, it just kind of a strange guy towards the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was with him at Blues for a little bit. And I loved him to bits. He's a funny guy, but he's loose.
Yeah, he was loose.
Double loose.
Yeah, loose.
Double loose. But I did. I really liked him. In the current game right now, right, you've got to pick one midfielder to be in your team to set you up for the goals, and then you've got to pick another striker to play alongside. Who are you
Good
picking?
Question.
Midfielder, Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one. He just, do you know what I mean? He just, I played with one who was incredible in Luka Modric.
Yeah.
Who was incredible. But if you talk about assists, De Bruyne is the one, and he just looks like half a yard.
Different level. Yeah.
Makes passes that aren't there. Yeah,
exactly.
He kicks it different. He slaps it different. He's different.
Do you know what he does? He puts it into an area where centre forward should be.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is perfect. He's not looking for me if he makes a run. He's putting it into that area and basically saying to me, if you're not there, it's your fault.
Yeah.
De Bruyne would be the midfielder. The centre forward to play alongside in the current climate, Harry Kane probably.
Yeah.
Because not only does he drop into that number 10 spot, so I could play it high. Do you know what I mean? We could kind of feed off each other, but he's not only his goals, his passing attributes, his technique,
work rate.
I think Kane.
I love it, Bentley. That was absolutely world class, mate. Yeah. Thank
Enjoyed
you,
it, mate.
Very
Thanks
much.
For having me on the Foscast. I'm really
sorry for the thumbnail, mate. We'll change it. We'll change it. We use a different one for the thing.
We'll replace.
Okay, Bentley. Really appreciate that, mate. Absolutely buzzing. As always, we finish every podcast. We look into this camera here and we say, "Up the Foscast."
Up the Foscast.
Up the Foscast.
Yes, Ben.
Brilliant.
Well
Thank
well
you,
done,
mate.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Foscast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Foscast.